Well, joining me now on KMBR tonight is my old friend Marty Lurie. I haven't caught up with him in a few weeks now, and I just want to talk some Giants, talk some baseball, see what he's up to. This is how we catch up on 50,000 Watts during my show. He does the weekends, I do the weeks, and this is how we talk. So, Marty, how you doing? Thanks for joining me tonight.
No, a pleasure. Always good to talk some ball with you, especially this time of year. We're in the dog days. You know, every day is a tough day here.
Every day is a tough day, but if you want to play in October, you can't lose 2 out of 3 to a last-place team, and you can't split with a last-place team. The Giants lose 6-1 today. They go one game under 500. You watched the game. I watched the game. What did you think about today's game?
Well, number one, they're 61-62. I mean, that tells a story. Bill Parcells always said it. You are what your record is, so that's number one. Logan Webb today, heck, for the first 4 innings, he looked terrific, but the 5th inning, he had some bad breaks on a ball that fell in here and there, but he couldn't shut it down. And that's what got me in the 5th inning. He just couldn't shut the inning down. When he needed swings and misses, he couldn't get it. And the other thing was Brandon Crawford. And I know everyone talked about it today, you know, the ball that was hit at him, should he have caught it? Absolutely. This is a play that I've watched through his whole career. He never misses a ball like that, and it opened up the floodgates to the 6 runs that came in. So I think what I learned from today is, Branch Rickey said it, it's better to get rid of a player a year too early than a year too late. And what that means is this could end up to being a terrific year because the teams ahead of the Giants are awful. San Diego got shut out today by Cleveland, believe it or not. They got swept in that 2-game series. Milwaukee's got to play the Dodgers tonight. We'll see what happens there. The Phillies are probably going to take care of the Reds today. But when you look at Milwaukee and San Diego, they don't hit. They don't hit. And the Giants have better starting pitching, I think, than both of those teams. Bullpen-wise, there's always trouble there. But those teams are flawed. So however the season ends up, it ends up. But the thing that I'm learning from it is you don't bring back Brandon Belt. I hate to say it. You don't bring back Evan Longoria. And with Crawford, you do have him under contract for another year, but you get another shortstop who can play full-time because he's just not covering the ground anymore. So I think from today's game, it pointed out to me, as much fun as Longoria is, and he can only cost $8 million net next year because of the $5 million buyout, and it's a $13 million contract. You need younger athletes. You need them in August. You need younger legs. You need something to build on, and you can't bring back older players next year. And that's what I took from the game today.
Yeah, I took a few things from the game today. Those are all really good points. Dusty Baker's day game rule will always be in the back of my head. And what it was is he would let the bench guys play on day games after a night game because he felt like they were hungry, they're ready to get after it. And when he had older players, those are the spots he would give them a day off. So when you're deep on the bench and you have guys that you trust on the bench, you know, it's tough with a short turnaround for a 30-something-year-old guy to bounce back. You saw Evan Longoria, who's the hottest hitter on the team. He had a rough day today. The Brandon Crawford play, I have no problem with, Marty. I've been there, done that. I played shortstop most of my career. And the low line drive straight at you is the toughest play because if you hesitate for a minute and you don't go in and catch it in the air, now you don't have enough time to back up and get the hop, the big hop, because it's hit so hard. So there's this moment of decision when a ball's hit right between your eyes that it's hard to judge velocity. If you're standing in the middle of a street and a car's coming at you 80 miles an hour, you can't tell how fast that car's coming at you. But if you're standing on the side of the street and you see that car coming, it goes by you at 80 miles an hour, you're like, whoa, this guy's going way too fast. You know, the speed limit's 50. But when a line drive is hit at you, no matter what position you're at, it's hard to judge the speed. So if I'm standing behind second base, I'm Brandon Crawford, and I've done that play, and I've been in his shoes before, there's this moment of choice where you have to make it, you have to go for it, or you have to back up on it. And if you hesitate a little bit, and they showed the Exmo replay, there was a little, and that just little millisecond of, when you're not going to go get it, and you don't go back, now you're stuck in no man's land, and the ball plays you, and that ball was hit hard. So should he have made that play? I don't think so. I mean, could he have made that play? Yes. So that's the difference for me. And, you know, the older guys on a day game after a night game with a short turnaround, that was the hardest part for me when I was in my mid-30s. You know, I didn't play every day, but I did, you know, get to play in those games. And those were always my games with Dusty Baker, with Art Howe. Hey, you got the day game tomorrow. Go get them. Get some rest tonight. And the thing with Logan Webb is that I can't criticize this guy, Marty, except for one thing. this might be something he will develop as he goes on. He's 25 years old. But the great ones, you've seen them, I've seen them, they have that reach-back quality when the game's on the line and they turn it up a notch. We see it with Carlos Rodon all the time. He goes from 94 to 97, 98 when he needs it. And Logan Webb doesn't have consistently that swing and miss stuff to get out of jams. He has the tenacity. He's a gamer. He doesn't mind being in those situations. He almost embraces it at times, and he fires you up, but he doesn't have that reach back 97-mile-an-hour sinker that's just going to be a bowling ball on your hands when he needs it, or at least I haven't seen that this year. So my takeaway from the game is how I started this conversation with you, Marty. You can't lose 2 out of 3 to the Rockies, and you can't split with the last-place Detroit Tigers.
No, absolutely. Let me comment on what you said, though. I've watched Brandon Crawford his whole career, and he never misses that ball. He must be a good traffic cop. He must be able to tell the speed without any radar, I'll tell you that. He probably can stand on the side of the road and give you a ticket without any help from any other policeman or devices. Because I'm telling you, FP, he doesn't miss that play ever, ever. And that's a play that he makes in his back pocket. That ball was hit 86 miles an hour. And if it was hit 96 or 106, I could see it eating him up. But that's neither here nor there. My feeling is I've seen him his whole career, and that's a play he makes. As a big leaguer, you're 1,000% right. It is a tough play, but it's a play that a Gold Glover makes, and he's a Gold Glover. And I agree with you on Webb, and that's what I said in my open. He just doesn't have that pitch today, or has had it in the past. He has. But he didn't have it today to get out of trouble. And he had to get out of trouble, and that was the problem. The other thing is, boy, runners in scoring position again, 1 for 13. They left 10 on base. Let me ask you that. What do you do? I mean, these are major league hitters. You're facing a Tiger pitching staff. You know, it's not an all-star pitching staff. You did the same thing against the Rockies. What do you do? 1 for 13 with runners in scoring position. I think over the weekend they were like 3 for 38, something like that.
You know, I wanted to just let them know they were playing in Coors Field over the weekend. They had 5 hits in the first game, 5 hits in the second game, and that's hard to do at Coors Field. And, you know, they scored 1 run today. So we can sit here and talk about Brandon Crawford's play all we want, but the Giants scored 1 run today against a team that was 47-77, 30 games under 500 before their win tonight to go to 48-77. So for me, that's been the story. Runners in scoring position, that's always a thing that kind of snowballs. When one guy doesn't get it done, the next guy presses. And when you're going well as a ball club and you have confidence in who's behind you and who's in front of you and your record, all of that stuff, you don't press in those situations. And the more you succeed as a hitter, as an individual with runners in scoring position, you get to the point where it's almost a boring at-bat when you don't have runners in scoring position. My rookie year, I drove in 56 runs playing part-time for the Expos. And I had a lot of two-out knocks with runners in scoring position. I hit seventh all year, and I came up with 3, 4, 5, and 6 on base all the time. And those at-bats became fun for me, Marty. I mean, secretly, if there was no outs and the bases were loaded, I would hope the guy in front of me made an out so that I would come up with 1 out and the bases loaded and clean up, because I just enjoyed hitting in that situation that year. Now, you know, fast forward to other years in my career where I wasn't as comfortable, I would hope the guy in front of me would drive those runs in so I didn't have to, because, you know, those were very pressure-packed situations. And as a hitter, you're getting the best of the best of the best from whoever's pitching in those situations. Greg Maddux used to throw 91, 92 miles an hour. He had a nasty sinker, a nasty cutter, nasty split, nasty change. When he had a runner on third less than 2 outs, you look up on the scoreboard, it was 94, 95, and you're like, wait, where did he get that from? I've only seen Greg Maddux 90 to 91. He gets a runner on third. He turns up the dial a notch. So now all of a sudden, every hitter in the lineup becomes a three hitter. And if you ever hit third in the big leagues, and I did for a couple of weeks, you get the nastiest of nasty from the nasty pitchers. You know, they bring out their A-plus stuff. They turn it up a notch. So the sliders are biting. The curveballs are nastier. The sinker's on your hands. And so it becomes tougher in those situations to drive in a run. That's why when you see guys, Marty, that they have a lot of solo home runs, it's because there's nobody on, and pitchers will challenge you with nobody on because they don't think a solo home run can beat you. But now if there's runners on first and second, it's a lot harder to hit a home run because now I'm getting the A++ stuff from whoever's on the mound. They don't want to give up a 3-run home run, so they're turning up the dial. They're redlining, and they're giving me their best stuff. It's kind of a high adrenaline at-bat for the hitter. It's a high adrenaline at-bat for the pitcher. and, you know, made the best man win. And if you're not used to being in those situations as a hitter, sometimes you press. Younger hitters are swinging a lot in those situations. Against a veteran pitcher, they go soft. They bounce stuff. They make you, if you're going to show them you're aggressive and you play your hand early in those situations, for me, the best hitters with runners in scoring position are not afraid to hit with two strikes. If you're comfortable with hitting with two strikes and you're patient in those at-bats, you're waiting for a mistake and you pounce on the mistake and you drive it somewhere and you can't be afraid to hit with two strikes. And the greatest guys I've been around, the Giambis, the Barry Bonds, you name them, the better hitters with runners in scoring position. I'm probably leaving out a lot of guys that I play with. But they weren't afraid to hit with two strikes, and they always realized, Marty, that the pressure wasn't on them. The pressure was on the pitcher.
Well, those are good hitters we're talking about. We're talking about a team now that left-handed is in a major slump. I'm glad when Tommy La Stella comes up. I mean, I'm saying, hey, he's got a shot to drive in a run. But when Wade comes up, and look, these guys won 107 games last year. Wade was absolutely terrific. He's been banged up this year and has never gotten untracked. Mike Yastrzemski is the lowest average hitter in Major League Baseball since June. Crawford's hitting .220. Belt's hitting .218. So these are players who are just not getting it done this year, and runners in scoring position batting that way. You're so right about it, but they're not facing Maddox every day. They're not facing Randy Johnson. They're facing regular pitchers. They're just not getting it done right now. And I think year to year it could be different. One year I remember the Cardinals hit .350 with runners in scoring position. The next year they hit like .220. So there's that element too. But it's the quality of the hitter who's coming up, and I think that's what we're seeing right now. From the left side, if it's Jock Peterson, if it's the ones I've mentioned, they're not getting big hits. Joey Bart, you know, bloop went in today. He's now making contact, so he's doing well from the right side. Flores has got the most at-bats of anyone on the team, and he looks like he's tired right now. But you're putting Wilmer Flores in the three spot and putting the pressure on him to get it done. J.D. Davis was fun when he first came over, but right now he's slowed down. He's something, you know, like one for his last 15 or 16. So I think it's the quality of the hitter, quite honestly, and these guys are just not having a good year. I don't think it's the pitcher necessarily. I think it's the hitter that is just not having a good year, and they're being exposed a little bit more because they don't have the background of Giambi, of Nolan Arenado, of Bonds, and people like that. You're looking at players who busted through at an older age last year and are being adjusted to by the league, and they're having a tough time.
Yeah, and Marty, you know, talking to Marty Lurie now on KNBR, you guys know his voice. I don't think he needs a reintro. But Marty, when you talk about the situations these guys are put in, and you talk about J.D. Davis, when he was playing consistently and he came over in the trade, he was raking. Then all of a sudden it starts to be the platoon thing. And the line change worked last year, and I understand that. But as a former player, if I'm sitting on the bench, and even if I know the line change could be coming, I see the lefty warming up in the dugout, I go down the cage, I hit some tees, I have a coach tossing to me, I get loose. Do you know how hard it is to come off the bench into a big situation and produce? Now, I know the Giants did it last year. They led all of baseball with 18 pinch hit home runs. Their pinch hitting was incredible. But that's an anomaly, man. It is so hard to come off the bench and do anything at all, let alone you put me in the bright lights with the game on the line, runners in second, third, one out, after I've been sitting there for 2.5 hours. I mean, just the mentality of that, the humanness of it, you know, the human being part. Like, you can crunch numbers, but to control your pulse, to go up there and to visualize and for your eyes to be warmed up to 96, 97, 98 out of bed is hard, man. And when you're asking these guys like J.D. Davis to come up in big situations, has he done it? Yes, because he's a good hitter. But now, this, I heard, you know, early in the season, well, it keeps everybody fresh. You know, me getting one at-bat in the eighth inning every night's not keeping me fresh. But me getting four at-bats five times a week and seeing velocity and seeing release point and making adjustments in the course of an at-bat, if I have two at-bats, it's like rushing through the supermarket when you're grocery shopping. And you're kind of in a rush, and you're forgetting stuff, and you get home, and you're like, I forgot this, I forgot that. It's such a rushed feeling when you get up there. It's hard to slow your pulse. It's hard to slow the game down when you come off the bench. Have guys done it? Yes. I was never good at it, so that's probably where you're getting this take from. But if you talk to people in baseball, pinch hitting is the hardest thing in the world, and they phrase it as it's a line change and we're going for matchups. Bottom line is this is pinch hitting, man, and I don't care. I talked to Ryan Zimmerman at the end of his career, and he had to start doing this off the bench. And we were talking one day. He's like, I don't know how guys do this. This is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. You got to come off the bench for one or two at-bats a night, cold. I don't know how guys do it. And then you're telling guys that are accustomed to being bench players or accustomed to being everyday players to be either or whenever, however, whenever. Like, to me, that's more conducive to just a high-stress atmosphere versus an atmosphere that's conducive to success.
This team is leaving its mark by being a platoon team. That is the mark that Farhan and Gabe Kapler are leaving when you look back on their tenure. What was their tenure? Who are they? What kind of a team do they run? What kind of a game do they run? They run a game of platoon advantage, and they'll do that countless times, whether it's good or bad. They're in a position now where the platooning is not working. And I said it over the weekend, exactly what you just said. I'd say play Slater every day. Play J.D. Davis every day. Yastrzemski is good in center field, but he gives you nothing at the plate other than a couple of walks. Wade has got trouble now. Play guys consistently from the right side, even against right-handed hitters, and give them a chance to do it, because you're 139 games in. Or 123 games in. You have 39 to go. There's plenty of time, and I'll say what I said at the top of the show. San Diego is not running away from anybody. They cannot hit a lick right now. Milwaukee doesn't hit very much. They're having trouble getting the ball to Williams, who's a new closer, and he's not perfect. Hader pitched today for San Diego for the first time and looked decent, but they've got trouble in the bullpen too. Those teams are not putting anyone away. The Giants are still in this thing, believe it or not.
So take
that to start, and we know that. All right, we know that. However, you played for Philippe Alou. You played for Dusty. You played for Art. You played for many managers. They all put their mark on the game, whatever it was. Felipe, the way he would handle the bullpen, the way he would handle the starting lineup. No one came in and said, Felipe, a lefty's pitching today. You better play an all right-handed lineup. Managers for the history of the game, Tony La Russa still does it today the way he wants to do it. The Giants don't do that. They don't manage the game that they see. They manage the game they're prepared for, which is okay. That's what they do. Old-time managers put their mark on the game as to who they were. Chuck Tanner, he came in and managed the A's in the 70s, and he stole 300 bases because he had guys who could run. So my point is, be the manager that looks and sees what's going on in the game and leave your mark on the game. When it's all said and done, I'll ask you this. What is Gabe Kapler's mark on the game of baseball? Who is he as a manager?
I don't know. I haven't seen him enough. I saw him in Philadelphia, but he's a different manager than he was in Philadelphia. He has a little more feel for the game here in San Francisco, and he's the reigning manager of the year. He won 107 games last year. So for me, it would be hard to move on from something that worked that easily. You know, if you won 107 games and you put all your players in the same positions they were last year and they're not performing, they're injured, you know, that's hard. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it is probably their motto down there. And they went all in on the same guys they had last year that won 107 games. It just hasn't worked this year. And I think their thinking, Marty, is if you deviate from the norm, if I start hitting on 16 instead of staying on 16 versus a face card, I never know when to do it and I'm all over the place. But to me, in my experiences, and it's a different game now, and you have to preface it with that, the managers of today are not as managey as they used to be because it's more of a front office game. I mean, you've seen managers talk about recently, it's a front office game that they might as well come down and manage in the dugout because they're doing everything in the front office. And if that's the way the game is, that's the way the game is. I love baseball no matter how you cut it. It's just like pizza. There's never a bad pizza in baseball. There's never bad baseball. It's just a different game now. Mm-hmm. And it's more of an analytic game. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. You and I are romantic. We like baseball. We like to see Billy Martin put on a squeeze. We like to see Billy Martin get ejected. We like to see Earl Weaver come out and yell. But, you know, we like to see passion in the game. in managers that left their mark. Bruce Bochy, again, how he managed in the regular season, how he managed in the postseason. Nobody better in my mind ever at doing that. I mean, he's a winner. He won during the regular season. He handled a bullpen better than anybody I've ever been around. And there's an art to that, and you leave your signature on the game. Felipe was a player's manager. He didn't have any rules. Just show up and play hard. That's it. Be on time and play hard. And, you know, he really didn't care about relievers. He would run through them left and right, and he was more of a starting pitcher guy, but he loved guys that play hard. He loved guys that were fearless, and he loved guys that played the game the right way. So, you know, every manager leaves their mark on the game, but I don't think this is a time in baseball for managers to leave their mark on the game. I don't think they have any power. I really don't. I think, you know, it's more about hugging guys. It's more about being a people person and communicating and making sure your players are happy and just getting along with players. That's why you're seeing younger and younger managers, because it's a young person's game. You're in your early 20s, and you need somebody that can relate to people in today's world that are in their early 20s.
I agree 100%. I agree with you 100%. The game has changed, and there's a game that I described and you just described, and there's a game of today that is the way the game is played. It doesn't make today wrong,
right?
And it doesn't make back then wrong. It's like, you know, I enjoyed a coffee milkshake, 20 years ago. Today I have a cappuccino milkshake with a latte and blah, 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 and sprouts and hemp seeds in it, you know? So that's the difference. I liked what I had before, and I think I had more fun with it. And I had more fun managing in the stands when I thought there was more going on in the game with that kind of manager. So how do you get out of it? That's the question. How do you get out of it? Well, you can't get out of it if you're getting players who are so platoon-oriented that you don't trust them to hit the other way. So what you have to do, and you don't have to get stars. You don't have to bring in a team of all-stars. You have to bring in a team of athletes, a team of players who can run, that can go first to third, that have some bat control, that can hit the ball the other way, that are good athletes and not reclamation projects. Because every time you bring in another reclamation project, whether it's a starting pitcher, a bullpen guy, or an outfielder, or a catcher, there's always a problem. We're hoping we got lightning in a bottle. Well, there's only so many bottles you can have, and I think they've used them up already. So my point is, next year, and what we're learning from this, they may get in the playoffs, and it may be a lot of fun. Who knows? But next year, no older players brought back. Thank you so much. If it's a year too early, that's our problem. And I'm going to go out and get athletes who can play and run the game, who can play both ways and hit both ways, where I'm not worried where I have to platoon every single minute. Because the way the game's being played today, if Mike Yastrzemski is hitting 160 or Wade's hitting 150 or Peterson hasn't hit a home run since June, when that platoon situation comes up, I'm putting them in there. Well, we've gone through 123 games. They're 61-62. It's time to do something different.
Time to do something different. Well, something different just came out today with Major League Baseball. The schedule, the 2023 schedule came out. And it looks like the Giants are going to be all over the place. I want to read you my tweet real quick, Marty, and get your reaction. I mean, you don't have to agree, disagree. I don't care. You know, we just talk baseball. We're friends. I said, while the 2023 Giants schedule may be fan-friendly in order to see more teams, the travel toll on the players will be significant. It's much easier during a 162-game grind to hop on an hour/2-hour flight in your division than flying consistently across the country. They're at the Yankees. They're at the White Sox. They're at the Tigers. They're at the Astros, they're at the Twins, and they're at the Blue Jays. And then you add on the traditional Miami, New York Mets, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Washington, Chicago Cubs, St. Louis, Philadelphia. And that's a lot of travel and a lot of time zones. Just think how you feel when you travel, and now these guys have to play a game. Your thoughts on the new schedule?
Yeah, they don't seem to mind that. That's not an issue. And look, the players agreed to it. You know, the Players Association left it up to baseball to make the schedule. So if they didn't like it, they should have said something there about travel days and day games when you have to go to time zones or whatever it is. So let's put that aside for a second. The players sort of made their bed. That's part of what the agreement was all about. It does make it for a more competitive season, and it does give the fans something where you know you're going to play every team in baseball every year. And that's different. And I think it's okay. I think it's all right. In the division, I was thinking about it, you play your division rival 13 times each. You've got 46 interleague games plus four with the A's, that's 50. And then you get about another 52 games with the other 14 teams in baseball. So, you know, it's okay. It's all right. Well, no, you get six games with the other 10 teams in baseball. That's how it adds up to 162. So you're playing the whole National League, the whole American League. Everybody's doing it. It's different. It's like when Interleague first came in. I think it's going to make for a more interesting race because you're not stuck in your division all the time.
You know what's going to happen? You're going to get stuck in a city because when you have one trip in, and it's in the Midwest in the summertime, and you get rained out, I don't know how they're going to reschedule these games. You're going to see a lot of 1 a.m. starts in baseball next year because anytime you travel to a city once, you have to play those games. You can't fly back on an off day, and if you do, it's just a cluster. And so now if I'm traveling and I'm on the Giants or a West Coast team and I'm traveling across the country to Detroit and it's a one-time deal and I'm there for three games and it gets rained out, we are waiting around, man. That game's starting at midnight. That game might start at 2 in the morning now because that's the only time you're in. And you ask Major League Baseball, they hate when it's the last time in for a team or the only time in for a team and there's weather. And when you look at the Giants' schedule next year, there's a lot of weather in the summertime in the Midwest, and they're going back there. So heaven forbid they get a couple of games rained out, say, in New York or in Philadelphia when you're only in there one time. The beauty of playing 19 times in your division, yeah, is it boring for us? Of course. We watch them play the Rockies 19 times. We watch them play the Diamondbacks 19 times. But you go to those cities two or three times. And on the West Coast, fans don't think about weather. You're not getting rained out in L.A. You're not getting rained out in Arizona. They got a dome on it. Colorado, maybe, but they have great drainage there. And you're going there three times, so you can play a doubleheader. So when you're playing in your division so much, if there is weather, you can kind of say, well, we'll make a doubleheader on September 12th, and it's June when you get rained out. But this is going to be disastrous if any games get rained out with the new schedule.
Great point. No, that's a great point. I hadn't thought about it, and no one's really discussed it in handling the weather. Now, there are a lot of two-game series. I've seen that. There are a lot of off days in there. Maybe they've put that in to compensate for the weather. But that's a great point. Well, what do you think about the competitive part of it? So now everybody's playing sort of the same schedule, but for the division games. How do you like that?
I would have two divisions, the East and the West. And I would have them compete and just have like six teams or whatever you want to do, five teams from each division play each other in the playoffs. And there's no leagues. It's just the East and the West. So when you play the Oakland A's, if you're the Giants, those games mean something because now they're in your division. They're a Western team. I don't know where you draw the line. I don't know how you divide it up. But there wouldn't be an American League and a National League. It'd just be the East and the West. And then you compete. But getting back to your question, I don't know. I got to see it play out. I don't know how this – here's my thought, Marty. I have no confidence in Major League Baseball because every time they tinker with something, it doesn't work, and they don't think about the ramifications of the new rule or the schedule change or the this or the that. You know, I've heard rumors this year about the humidor, and they overdid it in April, and they had to turn back the humidors, and they were sending emails to Major League managers once a week saying, we've done this with the humidor, and they've turned it back a little bit, and now you're seeing the ball start to jump. So – I don't understand a lot of the things that are going on. It's way above my pay grade, but I don't have confidence in Major League Baseball right now and the decisions they make because, quite frankly, none of them have really worked.
Well, it's funny you say that because someone said the other day, hey, the game was okay for 145 years. The last 5 years, all of a sudden the game's not okay. So, you know, someone brought that up. But looking at this situation, baseball's involved with marketing. Heck, the Giants are going to play in Mexico City next year. There, you got a game in London. They're going all over the world. They're going to be playing in front of the pyramids soon like they did in 1908 when they took a team to Egypt to do that. So they're trying to market. And what it means is that Mike Trout now comes into San Francisco. Mike Trout now comes in to play the Mets. You're going to have Juan Soto playing against the Yankees. So you're going to be able to market that all year long. And that's the bottom line for baseball. They're trying to get the streaming going. They're trying to get the marketing going. And I think a big part of this is to get the big stars throughout the game so they're not regionalized. So Mike Trout is only seen by Houston and Seattle and the A's and Texas. So you know you're getting them all over the league. So I think that's an important part of it. So I see that happening. But next year, FP, there's going to be a pitch clock. I'll guarantee you that. They love it in the minor leagues. It's taken 20, 30 minutes off the game. They still have all the commercials. They'll have to deal with that. But the game is going to speed up. They'll make some adjustments for the major leagues because in tough situations, you can't have Kenley Jansen taking 45 seconds. No. But, you know, you can make it 20 seconds or what have you, and that'll help quite a bit. The shift is going to go away next year. I'm telling you, they're going to have people on the dirt. I see that coming. And the most interesting one that they've tried in the minor leagues, and that is that there are three, not a robo-ump, but the manager can challenge three pitches during the game. And it is, you know, obviously the pitchers are computerized or whatever. And you can challenge three. Like if it's a 3-2 pitch and you get one of those umpires who, you know, the ball is halfway outside and he calls strike three, you can challenge it. And you get three to do during the game. How about that?
Yeah, those are going to be interesting rules. We'll see how that all plays out. But every time we tinker with the game, man, there's 14 different things that we didn't think about with the rule we implement that has collateral damage is what I call it in the game.
Trial and error now. Let's face it. The baseball's in the stage of Rob Manfred. It's changing every single year, and that's kind of weird.
It's weird because the average fan doesn't know the initial rules, and now we're throwing a whole set of new rules at them, and they're so confused they don't want to watch it. They rather watch, I don't know, the Kardashians or something than baseball because it's more interesting at this point.
You don't like watching a balk? You don't like watching?
No, I don't like it. I don't like watching throwovers. I was joking.
But that's going away too.
Yeah, two throwovers all you get. And then let everybody run until they tag it. Marty.
That's what they want to do.
We're up against a pitch clock.
It's always fun.
It's like a podcast that we should do a baseball podcast. We've been talking for 33 minutes, just rapping like old friends about baseball. Wow. It's good stuff. I appreciate you taking time out to come on my show. It's nice catching up with you. And one of these days we should talk off the air like we talk on the air. But this is fun, man. It's good to hear your voice. I love to hear your takes. And it's just so easy doing radio with Marty Lurie.
What a pleasure. You're the best, FP. Good luck to you.
All right, Marty, thanks a lot.